Now, don't put your barbecue away for the winter just yet. Get those briquettes burning for one last time as Joe White looks at our attraction to fire in the fire of life.
Firework! That looks way high. Look, that's a big one. That went really high.
What we are cooking here is a sort of sausage together with hamburgers. A very nice lamb kebabs, lamb and mint kebabs to be quite honest.
So Josh, are you going to cook barbecues when you're older, do you think?
So as you can see, I've lit the fire now. In about 2 to 2.5 hours time, it'll be ready for us to rake out and to walk on.
Fire fascinates us. We're enchanted by the enigmatic beauty of a flickering flame, and as a source of warmth, light and protection, it has been worshipped and its power used in countless ways. It's difficult to imagine life without it, and yet it can destroy us utterly. In a world of central heating, electric light and microwave ovens, we're increasingly distanced from fire in its raw state, but fire is everywhere.
Fire is one of the distinguishing features of humanity. No other animal uses fire. No other animal creates fire. Man is a diurnal mammal. We can't see in the dark.
Fire is one of the very ambiguous, ambivalent symbols in culture.
Fire, because it can transform anything, it burns and destroys things, it turns, you know, raw food into cooked food, it does all kinds of things, has this very basic transforming quality.
Mysterious and unpredictable, fire is profoundly connected to our understanding of the sacred.
If you look at the sort of mythological sources of fire, there is this sense that the source of fire is divine.
And it's easy to see why. To early man, fire actually came from the sky.
Lightning, because it comes from heaven, is literally a link between the upper world, the supernatural world, and the earth world.
Several cultures, realizing that the discovery and mastery of fire must have been of immense importance to their ancestors, do have myths about it having been brought into this world from the other world.
According to the Sioux Indians, the Great Spirit sent a white raven to carry fire to the man and woman who had survived the Great Flood. But the raven stopped on the way to devour carrion and allowed the fire to go out. As a punishment, the Great Spirit made his white feathers black. The Great Spirit then sent a small grey bird, the Urbette, to carry fire to the man and woman. The bird did as he was bidden, and as a reward the Great Spirit gave him 2 little black bars on each side of his eyes. Ever since then, the Sioux Indians regard the Urbette with great respect and imitate the bird by painting black bars on each side of their own eyes.
Prometheus went to Olympus and raided the homes of the gods and stole fire and brought it back to Earth. And in punishment for that, the gods nailed him to a huge rock in the Caucasian mountains and sent a supernatural vulture which gnawed his liver every day, but only in the daytime. At night, the liver would grow again. And next day the vulture would come back again, and so on, forever.
Here is this amazing thing which flickers, which seems to have no shape. You can't grab hold of it. If you do, you burn yourself. And all of this kind of sacredness is very well embodied in this sort of strange, flickering, red, hot, unable to hold on to thing, which is fire.
In Zoroastrianism, the ancient religion of Persia, fire is worshipped as a physical embodiment of God on earth. In the great fire temples of Iran and India, the sacred flame burns perpetually, tended by a team of priests. The oldest fire temple is in Iran, where the fire has been burning for 2,500 years. At Zoroastrian House in West London, a jashan or fire ceremony is about to begin.
In the centre of the sanctorium, the centre of the room, what you see is the fire vase, I would say is about 3 feet in height and about 2 foot in diameter. It's a shape of a vase and it's made of brass. The fire is seen as the regent on earth and it's up on a pedestal because like a king it has to be elevated above the ground. Farhad is dressed from head to toe in white. On his face he's got a padan, which is like a white cloth mask to protect any spit falling onto the fire. What Farhad is doing is reciting the prayers for the fire, to the fire. So the fire, in a sense, is a living entity. The fire is listening to the prayers. He's feeding the fire. Because fire is a living entity, all living beings need food. So this is the food to the fire.
The cathedral fire is consecrated in a complex ritual that can take up to a decade. Fire from 16 different sources, including fire from a burning corpse and fire from lightning, are collected, purified, and finally mingled. Fire is so important to Zoroastrians that some have made the ultimate sacrifice to protect it.
The priest's jobs, not only to make sure the fire burned perpetually, but at the same time protect the fire against the enemies of Zoroastrianism. So we have got historically priests who, for instance, have actually died to ensure that the fire has lived. And I use the word lived because I said to you the fire is actually a living entity.
Present-day Iran may be a Muslim country, but important Zoroastrian customs survive.
The Iranian New Year is on the 21st of March, which comes back from the Zoroastrian days. On the Wednesday before, we actually have a very special celebration when everybody jumps over fires, which we lit in our gardens. And as we jump over the fires, what we say to the fire is that I give you my palace and I get your glow. And it's a very important celebration and we all do it.
In all the main old branches of the Christian church, the candle has been the most dominant way of using fire in ritual. The candle, it's light, of course, but it is also a little tame, manageable bit of fire.
Offerings are very often burnt to the gods, not so much cooked as destroyed. Power has the ability of transforming something in the human realm to something which is appropriate for the supernatural realm.
The fact that flames always rise make fire a natural and universal symbol of prayer. For the Apache Indians of New Mexico, fire is essential to transport their prayers to heaven.
We make prayer ties out of tobacco and little square pieces of cotton, and a prayer goes in each one of them. Because when you make your prayer and you put the tobacco that's wrapped up in cotton, you burn it in the fire at the end of the ceremony, your prayers are released by the fire and carried in the smoke, which is lighter than air, and carried up to Creator, and our prayers are carried with the smoke.
Very often fire was used as a symbol of the power of the gods.
When Moses first encountered God, where did he encounter him? In the middle of a burning bush. And the bush burnt but was not consumed, and the voice of God spoke to him out of the flame.
In these extremely hot, arid regions, some of the flowers give off aromatic vapours, which, when it gets very hot, vapour burns. So probably the biblical reference to a burning bush was in fact absolutely real.
The flickering flames of a fire have for centuries been used as a method of fortune-telling.
This idea of pyromancy is something which you get in many cultures. Because fire is a link with the other world, because it's a supernatural, a quintessentially supernatural thing, it also provides us a look into that supernatural world, and in particular, a look into the future. Of course, when you do look into the fire, the flickering shapes of the flame do seem to form patterns, but it's much more this idea that by looking at fire you can see into the other world. It is an actual gateway virtually into the other world.
Of course, we now know that fire isn't divine, but there's still a strong sense that fire is in some way the very essence of life.
there is this feeling that we have within us life. Life is fire more than it is anything else. So the idea that somehow within a person there is a flame, the flame of life, that goes out when that person dies. And we talk about someone burning themselves out. I mean, we actually use this expression.
But fire is also our most intense feelings and emotions. We talk about burning ambition, fiery temper. We're ablaze with indignation. We burn with the pain of unrequited love. But most of all, fire is sex. We are consumed by lust.
Our sexual desire is referred to often as fiery.
It's longing, it's yearning, which is fine if it's love, but not so good if it's lust. The fires of desire can be a torment.
The pressure of his warm body over her, feeding her desire like petrol flung over a smouldering fire, which would start it into flame. The brush of his
flesh against her own made her blood run hotter. She felt his every need, in every touch, every movement, every sound
he made, and happiness blazed through her. She was gasping with unbelievable pleasure as the
heated driving of his body moved in her.
Sean! Oh, yes! Yes! She moaned. Her face taut, clenched
in the richness of desire. She was so hot by then she felt as though white-hot flame was consuming her, consuming them both.
Sex and fire and life and desire and ambition, all of these things kind of twist together in this funny sort of way. Fire and sex as well as fire and cooking, one should think of that.
Since fire is a powerful symbol of life, the extinguishing of fire has come to represent its end.
The excommunication ritual was very dramatic. Anathema sit, it used to be said, and then the candle was turned over and sort of snuffed out. You also sometimes have the idea that the fire is put out when someone dies. Again, many cultures will put out the fires in the house of the dead, and then they will be relit from a fire from the house of the living. And this again is the idea that the dead must go into the other world. They mustn't stay here. And the power of fire that somehow is connected with their life on Earth has to go with them into the other world.
For many of us, our final earthly transformation will be by fire.
Cremation is a very interesting rite, because of course this is in a sense the ultimate transformation.
We actually charge at about 800 degrees, that's how hot the cremators will actually charge. It's a bit of a myth that the bigger the body or the larger the body, the longer it actually takes to cremate. The actual cremation process relies on the fat of the body.
On the beach at Via Reggio, the body of the poet Shelley was placed on a funeral pyre. As the pyre was lit, his friends, Lord Byron and Edward Trelawney, cast frankincense and salt into the flames and poured oil and vast quantities of wine over the body. The heat of the fire was intense, and the oil and salt caused the yellow flames to glisten and quiver. With the body consumed, the observers were astonished to see that the heart had remained intact. Edward Trelawney later claimed to have snatched Shelley's heart from the flames.
At the end, you will have stubborn parts of the body left, and the heart is a very difficult part to actually burn. So an ignition source is required to actually burn away these parts of the body.
Cremating bodies is a very, very widespread practice. You find it in a number of cultures.
Definitely in this country, cremation is more popular than burial. The figures that are bandied around are approximately 70 to 75% of people in this country are now cremated. There is one thing that is very much a myth within cremation, is the one that we burn them all together. The actual ashes that you do receive, the families do receive, are the ashes of their loved one. We've even had dying people visit the crematorium because they were interested to see what was going to actually happen to them when they came here. A majority of people are very reassured by what they actually see.
There are huge amounts of rights associated with this. And the rites seem to have two purposes. One is to release the spirit of the dead person in a way so that it goes into the other world, or so that it can be harnessed to do good to those who live. But there's also this sense of fire, of a kind of ultimate destruction of the bodily effects, and sometimes with cremation, objects are destroyed as well, possessions belonging to the person. So in a sense, it allows those who are left to let go.
Would I choose to be cremated? Yes, I've even picked my cremator. If Southampton Crematorium is still here, I'm going to go into number 6, because it's up the other end and very quiet.
To our ancestors, the connection between fire and rebirth would have been obvious. In nature, bushfires are often the start of a new ecological cycle. Some seeds can only germinate in the heat of a forest fire. Other species thrive in soil newly rich in nutrients from the ashes. The myth of the phoenix really says it all.
The phoenix is a bird, and it symbolises the perpetual renewal of life. The idea is that there's only one phoenix in the world at any one time. When it feels it is growing old, it sets light to its own nest, perishes in the flames, and is then reborn as an egg which is hatched by the power of those same flames, and out comes a young and beauteous phoenix.
The association of fire with the idea of rebirth also seems to be behind many of the calendar fire rituals around the world.
There may be an element that in winter the days get shorter, gets colder, the sun gets darker. There is an expectation of the return of the sun. So they light the fire. Not, I think, because they were afraid the sun wouldn't come back, but more to reinforce their belief that this cycle was going to be repeated.
One custom was widespread.
We have records, they're Roman records, and we know this happened in other places as well, in that at the new year, at the turn of the year, sometimes at the beginning of the year, sometimes in the spring, all of the fires would be quenched. So you would have darkness, a kind of symbolic darkness. And one fire would be relit, usually by the priests, or some public official, within a temple or within a sacred space. And everyone would come to this sacred space and get their fire from there, so that the fire you would then bring to your home was not merely fire, but it was sacred.
This custom is echoed in the Easter traditions of the Orthodox, Roman Catholic and High Anglican churches.
You come to church and you find that all the lights have been put out. Outside, a small bonfire has been prepared. And the priest takes a flint. With that, he lights the bonfire. He blesses it. Then from the bonfire, he lights a paschal candle. That means the Easter candle. He then enters the church carrying the candle. Then the light from that one big candle is used to light everybody else's candles. The whole thing symbolizes the start of the new life, of the resurrection of Jesus, the light which had been extinguished briefly when Jesus died on Calvary, now comes bursting back into life, because now we are in Easter and everything starts all over again.
But interestingly, you also see fires lit during the summer.
You get big bonfires on Midsummer's Eve in Scandinavia. You wait for June the 24th, St. John's Eve. That is the biggest festival of the year. It's even more important in some ways than Christmas.
Bonfire night is a peculiarly English custom, but it may have supplanted even older traditions.
The idea of having a big bonfire ceremony at the beginning of winter is more widespread. The usual date for it is Halloween.
In many cultures, fire is used therapeutically to heal and transform.
Fire can cure things, and it is often used as a healing ritual. And the most dramatic one is fire walking, where you actually walk over the hot coals.
Running through all cultures, there is this need to confront a very fierce and, on the face of it, frightening element, fire, and to, in some sense or other, triumph over it, or at least combat it on as an equal partner.
Firewalking is found all over the world and is often a way to demonstrate access to supernatural powers, either from a particular divinity or from within the self. In Aileni in northern Greece, the main firewalking ceremony, which has become a huge public spectacle, takes place on the 21st of May, the day the Orthodox Church celebrates St. Helen and St. Constantine.
For the people doing it, St. Constantine gives them supernatural power that enables them to walk on fire and not be burned, and also supernatural power to diagnose illnesses and cure illnesses. Each Anastenitis holding an icon, a wooden depiction of St. Constantine or Helen. They dance across or run back and forth across the fire. The fire walking ritual in Greece has been attributed by some people to being a holdover or survival of worship of Dionysus from ancient pagan practices.
In recent years in the United States and in Europe, firewalking has become a form of alternative therapy designed to promote psychological healing by empowering and transforming the participants. Not all firewalkers are motivated by personal growth. Some are more interested in the growth of their bank balances, and corporate firewalking events are commonplace.
Another tradition uses firewalking as a kind of business tool to encourage car salesmen and record salesmen to break their sales records. People are in business suits as opposed to the more countercultural approach.
At the New Age Quest Festival in Devon, about 20 festival goers signed up for a firewalking workshop with John Shengo.
Now, as you can see, I've lit the fire now. In about 2 to 2.5 hours' time, it'll be ready for us to rake out and to walk on. When it gets dark or dusk, it begins to look inviting, actually. The temperature of the embers that we're going to be walking on will be somewhere between sort of 800 and 1500 degrees, probably. It might even be more than that. That sort of temperature, human flesh carbonises.
How many miles of coal do we have to walk?
No, it'll probably be about 15 feet.
I'm doing the fire walk because I like a challenge. Yes, my feet are quite vulnerable. It's also a question of mind over matter, really, isn't it, I think?
Being burnt is one of our basic fears. Nobody would like to be burnt. If we can conquer that, then probably we can conquer many of our other fears.
As soon as you start raking out, it'll feel very hot. So all it takes is 2 or 3 seconds, you can pass it on to the next person. Everybody needs to have a hand in raking it out. What we want to end up with is at each end a nice clear cut demarcation line between the fire and the grass, okay?
Let's do this one again, okay?
We are one, we are one, we are one, we are one, we are one.
Okay, so let's form up around where I am here, if you can come back behind me, kind of thing. All right? Yeah, a little bit of a horseshoe shape.
They're starting to go across the fire.
I just absolutely love the feeling of moving across the fire, just getting to a really good flow with it. Fire spirit is an amazing creature, and I love it.
I think everybody managed to get across, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which is really great.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Whenever I see firewalking, and when I did it, I don't believe it's possible. It's really dramatic and powerful, and it's that sort of theatrical power that's counter to common sense and intuition that makes it a powerful spectacle that can convince people that something supernatural or something important psychologically is going on.
Scientists believe that firewalking is made possible by the relatively low conductivity of the coals, and the fact that they're in contact with the skin for only a short time.
While I accept that scientific explanation of firewalking, in no way does that dismiss or debunk the ability of rituals like that to be powerful psychological or religious transforming experiences.
A lot of African cultures, a lot of Native American cultures, use fire, not in a raw state, but as the heat of fire, as a way to symbolize the transformation from childhood to adulthood. And sometimes this can be repeated. A sweat lodge, for example, burning away whatever obstacle was there and emerging new again.
To keep that cohesive nature of the Native American culture, we incorporate fire in quite a few ceremonies. The fire represents purity and purification in the Native American world. And this lodge that I'm running this evening is a Lakota-style lodge. It's a small dome-shaped hut that has a small door that you enter on your hands and knees to show your humility and humbleness to the earth. The rocks are being heated up right now before the lodge begins in a sacred fire. And what we're doing when we heat up the rocks red hot through the fire, we're purifying the grandfathers, the rocks, with heat. And when all the grandfathers have entered the lodge and been greeted in a respectful way, we close the door, and inside the lodge is pitch black. Through the purification by fire, we also bring the knowledge and the teachings of the first people, because we also refer to rocks as first people, up to the front. It's no longer, the knowledge is no longer buried within the rock. The knowledge through the fire is forced out. So when the grandfathers come in the lodge and water's poured on them, you can hear them. And that is the voice of the rock people. And when you hear the voices of the rock people, there are teachings inside of there because they've been here the longest.
The smoke of a fire is also used to purify and protect.
There are areas where people are actually passed, children are actually passed across the fire in order to protect them. And again, this is associated with steppe cultures, for example, where water isn't common but where fire is.
In the older traditions of the Christian Church, incense are still used.
When you wish to honour something or somebody, the altar or a saint or a coffin, you incense as a mark of respect the coffins of the dead in funerals in Catholic liturgy. So you swing the censer more violently and out comes a puff of smoke.
At various times of year, fires would be lit and the animals would pass through the smoke. There's one beautiful description of two fires being lit and the cattle being driven between these two fires, and that would help to protect them during the year.
Moths aren't the only ones fascinated by fire. We also use fire because it's so beautiful to celebrate life, as our love of fireworks shows.
Whatever fireworks can be used for seriously, they're also great fun to sort of light something and have it explode and know it's not going to take you out with it.
We may think that fire rituals are a thing of the past, but maybe we need to think again.
We're beginning to see fire as making a positive connection between us and the primitive world. Bonfires at Beltane, at Midsummer, at New Year's are coming back in. And I think it's because there is a new sense of somehow making contact with the environment. And here one has this wonderful natural thing that we can use.
Even the humble barbecue has a hidden cultural significance.
And probably one of the most common modern fire rituals is the barbecue. You know, you kind of go into your own little back garden, your own little kingdom. You light a fire, often with great ritual. Does the father do it? Does the mother do it? Do the kids do it? You know,
it's a
man thing for the most part. And speaking as a woman, I think that's probably all to the good. And then you stick bits of food on it and you perform the most basic human ritual there is, which is cooking. And then you get your friends around and, you know, a good time is had by all. And I think one should look at the kind of the light side of fire ritual, that here it is still doing what it did in the primitive world. It is transforming our food from raw into cooked. It is still doing what it did in the primitive world. It is giving us a sense of community. And it's happening all in our own backyard. So it's almost as if we have this wonderful, vast, cosmological significance in the corner of the yard.
Bonfires and barbecues
training very early.
Training very, very early.
Barbecue is definitely a man
thing. Okay, last kebabs. Come and get them.
There's something indescribable about having a bar, isn't there?
You can't change it.
The contributors to The Fire of Life were Juliet Wood, Jacqueline Simpson, Malcolm Dubu, Loring Danforth, John Shango, Trevor Matheson, William Twofeathers, Hazel Rosotti, and Mariam Armstrong James. The readings were by Alistair Danson. The Fire of Life was produced and presented by Joe White.